Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Honecke. This week's guest is USDA Undersecretary Robert Bonney, who joins us to talk about the relief the department is providing after Hurricane Helene and the department's efforts to streamline farm loan programs. But first, here's this week's headlines. Vice presidential candidates J.D. Vance and Tim Walz debated for the first time Tuesday. Vance defended former President Trump's tariff proposals. While in office, Trump implemented sweeping tariffs on about $300 billion worth of Chinese-made products in 2018 and 2019. Trump is now proposing to impose an across-the-board tariff of as much as 20% on all American imports and to raise tariffs on China as high as 60%. The Biden administration has continued several of Trump's tariffs on Chinese imports and actually increased some of the rates on about $15 billion worth of Chinese imports. Vice President Harris has been critical of Trump's across-the-board tariff plan, but has not said whether she'd roll back existing tariffs on China. And finally, areas of Georgia, the Carolinas, and eastern Tennessee are facing extreme damages from Category 4 Hurricane Helene. After making landfall in Florida's panhandle, the storm flattened crops, destroyed infrastructure, and took more than 130 lives during the 600-mile northward path. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp said every commodity in the state has been damaged by the storm and estimated the cost of damages will exceed those from Hurricane Michael in his state in 2018, potentially reaching $110 billion. USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Robert Bonney says that up to $7 billion worth of insured crops were in the area of the storm. We asked him if he knows the amount of crops lost that are not covered by crop insurance.
Well, so first, let me be clear about what the $7 billion is. It's about 20,000 insurance contracts in the major path of the storm. And so that's the upward end of the liability. That's the amount of liability that RMA is covering. Now, we expect there are going to be impacts outside the sort of what we call the cone of the storm, right? And so, it's important to understand what the $7 billion is. There are going to be a lot of expenses, costs to farmers that aren't covered by that, both because not everything is insured, we know that as well, but because we know we've lost a lot of center irrigation pivots, we've lost a lot of infrastructure and other things. So the ultimate cost to agriculture is going to be a lot bigger. And that makes all our other programs important. On the crop insurance side, we're out today with direction to our partners in the insurance companies and the field to move as quickly as we can to reduce some of the paperwork to get payments out. FSA is working on a number of ways to reduce the paperwork that farmers are going to be required for everything, like how do they report losses, their ability to get into the emergency conservation program, emergency forest restoration program. All those programs, we're reducing the paperwork, make it easier for folks to get in. And then we also know, we've still got some offices closed, but we're going to have to surge staff. So we're already surging staff within states, and we're going to surge staff out of Washington in the coming weeks to make sure, and we're going to do it for a long time to make sure that we can cover the demand that we know is coming.
You spent a lot of time with FEMA after the storm. Tell us more about the crop and agriculture specific damage that you're hearing about.
We know there are a lot of poultry houses. We know there are a lot of livestock operations that have been hit. We know from our RMA data and from our NAS data what the nature of the parts of agriculture that have been hit. Cotton hit very hard. Pecans hit very hard. A lot of corn, but a lot of it was actually harvested. So unclear, where it was stored and other things. Soybeans have hit really hard. Citrus, fruits and vegetables in Florida. We've got orchards up in Western North Carolina. A wide variety of impacts. It's going to require all our programs. Congress is going to clearly want to look at additional help. The size of the impacts here are enormous.
And for those who are wondering, tell us more about some of the disaster assistance programs that USDA is willing to provide in the wake of this.
So we can provide emergency loans. Again, we're reducing some of the requirements. We now got disaster designations to move with those. Emergency conservation program can help folks move debris, restore fences. We've reduced some of the paperwork and requirement for investigations, on-site investigations, and those type of stuff. For livestock, livestock indemnity program for folks that have lost livestock. And then ELAP can help us get food and water to livestock. Again, with all these things, we're trying to peel back the amount of paperwork. On the NRCS side, there'll be opportunities in the Environmental Quality Incentive Program to do some things to help clean up debris removal and other things. Longer term for NRCS will be emergency watershed program. So we've got a range of opportunities to help producers who maybe didn't have crop insurance or you know, need more help.
We'll be right back with more from Undersecretary Robert Bonney right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. There's still a lot of anger on Capitol Hill and among farm groups about the way the last disaster aid package was structured. We asked Undersecretary Bonney what his message is to Congress as they write a new package.
The last package, the ERP 2022, did shortchange farmers, and it's shortchanged farmers because Congress only gave us $3.7 billion of a much larger, north of $10 billion losses. So we had to make decisions. We had to make decisions about how to allocate. Everybody took a haircut. We decided to help small and medium-sized producers more than large producers. So one of the messages is if we want to help all producers, there's a price tag. And in the case of the wake of this storm, it's going to be a significant price tag. We're happy to work with Congress on a bipartisan basis. Those conversations have begun about how do we think about structuring a disaster package. But if they want, farmers to have a different reaction, we're going to need the amount of resources that we've lost here.
I do want to touch on the farm bill here, something else that's very important. It has expired now. In your opinion, when does Congress need to either pass an extension or pass a new bill?
We continue to provide as much technical assistance as we can. Obviously, Congress writes the farm bill. We don't. Sooner is better. Impacts on us, things like the Conservation Reserve Program, we won't be able to enroll new acres. The impacts aren't big in the first few weeks that you lose a farm bill, but they gain over time. And the faster we get to it, both an extension and then write a farm bill, the better. The other thing I'll just say, I served in the Obama administration at USDA. I'm now back in the Biden administration, and the types of disasters we're dealing with now are only growing in scale and size, and the number of disasters we're dealing with at the same time. This is a thing that we need to think about in the context of the Farm Bill. How do we actually make sure that we've got the staff resources, financial resources to deal with instances like this? And I think I think the Farm Bill is an important place to have that conversation.
One last question before you go, if you could. Could you tell us a little bit more about USDA's efforts to streamline farm loan programs?
We've just out with a new farm loan rule that we think provides more flexibility to provide better service to producers, to provide, to think about repayment schedules different, to relax some of the collateral requirements, to be able to provide better loan servicing to farmers that may get in a little trouble. We're trying to arm our county offices with better tools to keep people in the business and to allow them to build capital in their operations. And so we're excited about it. It's not the only thing. We've also streamlined our farm loan application. We've got new tools to help farmers better understand the loans. We think the financing piece is absolutely critical. We think it's critical for young and beginning farmers. We think it's critical to address some of the equity issues that have dogged the department for a long time. So we're excited about it. We think it's going to serve all of agriculture. There's more to do, and I think there's some exciting partnerships in the farm credit side and others that we think will be really beneficial to agriculture.
Undersecretary Bonney, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson has a look at ports affected by the dock worker strike in this week's Map It Out.
$25,000 International Longshoremen Association dock workers went on strike Tuesday, leaving East Coast ports unable to move container shipments. The strike comes after union workers have raised the threat of a strike amid disagreements with a coalition of maritime employers for months over wage increases and future use of automation at ports. As you can see on this map, major ports from Maine to Texas are affected by the strike. Poultry, soybeans, animal feed, cotton, meat, bananas, produce, and other agricultural products are primary goods moved from the locations listed. Poultry was the largest U.S. agricultural export sent by container through 14 major East and Gulf Coast ports. The American Farm Bureau Federation estimates that East Coast ports handle 78% of waterborne poultry exports. Approximately 40% of U.S. containerized agricultural exports move through East and Gulf Coast ports. The strike could have a $1.4 billion impact on containerized agricultural exports and imports for each week it goes on. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss any of the insights and analytics that AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You won't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel is going to be focused on the port closure that's affecting agricultural goods across the country. Joined this morning by Danny Munch with the American Farm Bureau Federation and Peter Friedman with the Agriculture Transportation Coalition. And Danny, I want to start with you first, sir. This strike mainly impacts goods shipped by container. How long do you think it'll be before consumers start feeling the impact when it comes to imports first? And what kind of products are we talking about?
Yeah, so just a broad overview, about 70% of imports that we bring to this country over ships is containerized, and over 70% of that comes in our East and Gulf Coast ports. When we think about what is going to impact consumers first, these are perishable goods. Produce are going to be really the first thing that consumers might want to be worried about. Bananas is a significant one we've been talking about. Over 76% of our banana imports come through these ports. You also have a substantial amount of other fresh produce, different sorts of citrus, all of your exotic fruits that are grown in other countries from South America. Things like cocoa beans don't last as long as a processed cocoa powder, but close to 100% of cocoa bean imports come through those impacted ports, as well as a substantial amount of fresh seafood, over $17 billion of fresh seafood, primarily shrimp and salmon products, as well as numerous other seafood products came through those ports. Which is over 70% of our seafood imports. And, you know, a lot of that comes in frozen, but still can't just sit down in a container and thaw. So depending on sort of the duration of the strike and how retailers have been able to buffer their supplies, and the perishability concerns play a role to that factor as well, that's really what consumers are going to be looking at in the next week and a half or so.
Let's dive a little bit deeper now into the exports that are also being affected by this. Which commodities are going to see the most significant disruptions?
When we think about commodities, One of the largest is, in terms of percentage, 80% of our waterborne exports of poultry products leave these East Coast ports, about 50% of that going through Savannah. There's also a substantial amount of containerized soybeans that move through the East Coast, particularly Norfolk, Virginia, which moves about 60% of containerized soybean exports. You also have a substantial amount of red meat. It's 36% of our red meat exports leave those ports, 30% of our dairy products from all over the country, and a substantial amount of edible nuts, produce, vegetables from all over the country, east to west coast, are processed through those ports.
And Peter, I want to bring you back into this conversation, kind of piggybacking off of that point we just made there. Danny mentioned a lot of those commodities that rely heavily on containers. And now that supply chain is shut down. So how do you go about finding an alternative market, and how difficult is that?
Well, the first thing that folks are doing that import or export through the East Coast ports, and let's not forget the Gulf ports, Houston has become a major, major agriculture import and export port, Mobile, Alabama, so forth. And they're all impacted, as well as the East Coast ports. So when people thought maybe the strike was going to be a couple, 3 days, they kept shipping because ocean carriers said they were just going to continue going their regular route to the East Coast ports. And then they were just going to anchor off for a few days until they hoped the strike would be over. Now that this thing looks like it could be going longer, people are not putting their cargo en route to those East Coast ports. They're putting it en route to West Coast ports. And what's interesting is that during the COVID supply chain crisis, there was a lot of cargo that had been going out of the West Coast ports that was transferred to rail it all the way across the country.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. The port strike also has major implications for rail lines currently under the stress of harvest season. We asked Peter Friedman about the current state of rail service across the country.
The railroads, having gone through this before, anticipated what happens, and that is that they get backed up. And the railroads definitely do not want to be sitting there on rail with containers with no place to discharge, because those rail ramps get clogged very quickly. And that goes all the way across the country. When those rail ramps get clogged, they're clogged not only near the ports, but all the way to Kansas City, Minneapolis, Chicago, of course, Memphis. They get clogged and backed up, and they're starting to be clogged and backed up there. They're also clogged and backed up all the way to the West Coast. So those rail ramps where people use to go load West Coast cargo going east and vice versa, those are getting backed up as well. So what the railroads did to anticipate is they began, before anybody else, embargoing their rail.
And Danny, I'd like to bring you back into the conversation. You know, Peter just mentioned some of those rail issues that we have currently going on, but another big problem is the low water levels on the Mississippi River. How's that factoring into everything as well?
One of the ways we track this is the impact on downbound barge rates that folks have to pay per ton in order to move product down the Mississippi River. The way that USDA looks at reports those numbers is a percent above tariff rate. So for each of the points along the Mississippi, that base tariff ranges from $3.14 a ton to $6.19 a ton. And then the tariff rate that they report is the percent above that that they're at. So for instance, back in 2022, in October, we were at over 2,000% above the base tariff rate. Last year in September, we were at 878% above the tariff rate. So both very high months of those 2 years. This year in August, we're usually around 350% above the base tariff rate. In August, we reached 518% above the base tariff rate. And now in September, we were 755% above the base tariff rate. So we're starting to tick up in terms of costs to move product down the Mississippi River. I will say that back in the end of September, at Memphis, the stage level was about 10 feet below zero. And now we're actually in the data point from this morning, we're at above 6 feet above the stage level. So some of that precipitation from the hurricane, other places worked through its way through the river system and actually boosted levels a bit in parts of the Mississippi River.
And one last question for you, Peter, before we wrap up. You know, it's been 3 years since the bipartisan infrastructure bill passed. Are we seeing any impact yet from that funding?
It would be difficult to say that we've actually seen any. There's some grants that have slowly been announced, but actually getting shovels into the ground, not yet, hasn't happened. So, you know, in my briefing of the White House, which I do every day on this, you know, we have discussions as to what they're actually doing about it. And the fact is that there hasn't been an infrastructure, dramatic infrastructure changes really anywhere other than at some of those East Coast ports, which are now subject to the work stoppage. But the capacity of ports and marine terminals around the country to handle more cargo or to continue to handle the existing volumes of cargo hasn't happened. What could happen and what we're pushing the White House for, and all agriculture, is some changes in the regulations that wouldn't cost a cent, but would increase dramatically the infrastructure available. And that would be things like changing hours of service regulations, would be changing truck weights. We have the lowest allowable truck weights in the world here in the United States. If you could increase the truck weights just to what they allow in Canada and in Europe, you would actually have about 20% more highway infrastructure instantly.
Certainly a lot to be paying attention to as we focus on this strike and the impact it's going to have on American agriculture and this country as a whole. So Peter, Danny, thank you both for joining us this week. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, our Lydia Johnson looks at the annual change in net cash farm income by commodity in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
2024 net cash farm income is forecast to fall by $6.3 billion, or 9.6% from 2023. As shown by this chart from Terrain, there is great variation between income for different commodities. Among row crops, cotton, corn, and soybeans are seeing lower income by 28 to 40%. Wheat farms are seeing the highest year-over-year income drop by nearly 50%. Income from livestock is projected to be higher in 2024, which includes a 47% increase for dairy producers due to higher milk prices. Cattle, hogs, and poultry income is between 10 to 12% higher than the previous year. Poultry farmers are recovering from multiple poor years due to highly pathogenic avian influenza. The national cattle herd has dropped to the lowest level in 2024 in over 25 years, which has helped bolster beef prices. Although hog producers are making more money this year, their income is still the second lowest in the past 15 years when adjusted for inflation. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The monthly consumer price index is released Thursday, providing the latest gauge on inflation. And on Friday, the next World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report and USDA's monthly crop production report will be released. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunnigy. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.